On the tee, Jack Nicklaus.
This is the minute that millions around the world have waited for.
We will allow you to enjoy all of this. They are dancing in the pubs of Dublin. Harrington with an ace.
And we have a shining star at sunset. Rory continues his run to greatness.
The return to glory.
Right, guys, so we've got something a little bit different for us today. I guess, as everyone knows, Scotland is the home of golf, and it's a country filled with kind of very, very special golf courses that you hear stories about and feature characters like old Tom Morris, which could almost be out of a C.S. Lewis novel rather than reality. But for a lot of us, Scotland's a place that we don't necessarily get to go to for one reason or another. Like, I haven't been to Scotland yet to play golf. It's somewhere on the list, but for many people, it's not somewhere that we get the good fortune to go and play. A good substitute for that, I think, is a magazine, for lack of a better word, that I've recently discovered along with a few other people throughout COVID, and that's the Links Diary. And I'm delighted to say that Kenny Pallas, one of the founding members of the Links Diary, is on the podcast now. Kenny, how are you?
I'm good, Johnny. Thanks for having me.
So, what is the Links Diary? I know I called it a magazine. That's probably doing it a disservice. It's lovely. You were very good at sending me on the most recent issue, and it's a lovely. It's like a coffee table book more so than a magazine.
Yeah. No. Thank you. I think that's sort of what we refer to it as. It's a collectible coffee table publication. It's not a magazine that we hope you're going to read once and chuck out. We hope that people build a collection and take it from there. But yeah, it can be a magazine if you want to call it a magazine. We maybe elevate it a bit, but we're fine. As long as you're reading it, we don't mind what you call it.
To be crude about it, we'll say it's almost like Scotland's or Europe's answer to the Golfer's Journal over in the States.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. It is obviously an inspiration to what we've created. And when it did come about during the pandemic, sort of like you said, you discovered it at that point. It was our nicotine patch to get us through the time we could play. We just thought, like, let's just talk about it and that'll make it feel a bit better. And I honestly hadn't read the Golfer's Journal, so I didn't know much about it. But the other guys in the team all subscribed and were kind of deeply invested in that product. So there's no accident in the fact that we've taken inspiration from there. They're probably our only sort of real competition out there in terms of an offbeat look at golf rather than just the pro stuff and game improvement stuff. But honestly, they are an inspiration more than a competition.
Yeah, that's fair. So you mentioned that there's a few of you who kind of got together to start the Links Diary. Could you give a bit of background as to how many of the founders there are and what each of you kind of, what was your experience in golf before you set this up?
So we've got four in the team, and I still remember it. I was in my flat that I used to live in mid-pandemic, and I knew two of the guys of the four before we actually started this. And one of them sent me a WhatsApp, and I didn't know him that well. To be honest, none of us knew each other that well, but I got a WhatsApp. Would you be interested in this? Can we have a call? And that was us. So yeah, there's four of us. We've got Graham McCubbin, who is just a brilliant photographer. And he is our sort of lead in terms of that. And he does the videos and films too. We've got Stuart Curry, who is the designer. He does some photography as well. Stuart, I think it's fair to say, ties the whole thing together with his incredible design skills and makes it look as good as it does. And then we've got Jamie, who he oversees things. And actually, we're in a really nice position that he's gone full time with the business as of a couple of weeks ago.
Wow.
And Jamie has a brilliant network in golf. So he was able to get us stories quite quickly. Jamie writes sometimes as well. And he's really good at sourcing stories. So he's like the sort of operations guy that ties it all together. And it's great that he can now hopefully take us up to the next level when he can dedicate his whole working day to our project.
That's amazing. So how many people kind of, this is a seventh issue that's most recently gone out.
Yeah.
What's been the build up to get to the circulation that you have now? And I guess how many people have subscribed to you guys, or what's your model?
So we don't have subscriptions yet. We've been building out what that's going to look like, and we will launch the subscription within the next couple of months. Every time we go to do something new, we realize there's a couple extra steps that we need to take. It's what it is. But we didn't want to launch subscription until we knew we could definitely commit to fulfilling what people are signing up to. I think that's only fair. And this year we're going up to 3 editions per year rather than 2. So our next edition actually comes out at the end of February, start of March. We're almost at print now. So we started with just a PDF, an electronic version that we sent around anyone that was interested. We made 100 copies up and we sent them to people we knew, some influencers, just to sort of get the name out and test it.
Yeah.
And we couldn't really believe how well it went down. We were all a bit shocked. Frankly, we still are, we're not complacent about this. We still are amazed by just how well people talk of what we do. And when those 100 just went out so well, we thought, right, well, we have to do this and we have to try and make another one. So we expanded out that first edition, added a couple more stories, and then it just went from there. People buy it from our website. There are a couple of pro shops in Scotland that you can buy it, but only a few, and we're hoping to get it in more pro shops. But as we build it out right now, it's just direct to customer, really.
So the first issue, because the issue you sent me on is about 75 pages or so.
Yeah.
That was in the PDF, so it's probably double that in reality. How big was the first issue?
I think we were around 80 pages in the first one. And then we've increased it every time. We were at 128, then 132. The one you've got is 144, and that's where we're going to stay. We're continually trying to, without sounding cheesy, add as much value as possible, get as many stories and pictures and content in there as we can, because I think the nature of it is that, you know, some people will read it right through, some people will dip in and out. But as I said earlier, we hope people come back to it. So if we can get as many different stories and pictures in there, then it gives people that reason to come back. Maybe they've gone and played somewhere. Like the 7th edition had a story on Dornoch. Maybe you've gone and played Dornoch and now you want to go back and read that because you remember it's there and add a little bit more to that experience.
So like 80 pages for your first issue is a lot. What's the background of yourself, Jamie, Graham and Stuart? Like, do any of you do you work in the golf industry, or is this just purely a hobby?
So Jamie does. He, when we all first started, Jamie's done some time as a club pro and he's done some time working in tourism with South Ayrshire and Visit Scotland. Then he was working with Scotland where golf began. So Jamie is definitely the most golf professional person in the group. Just a couple of years ago, Graham was able to go full time with his golf photography. So he's now really getting into the industry, and Stuart's been sort of part time working on projects in it. Myself, I'm probably the furthest from the industry, although I'm trying to change that. And I actually work in the healthcare industry now. So it's a wee bit off, but I did work in the golf industry for a while. But, you know, essentially, we're just massive fans of golf and what it is. And that's what we want to get across. It's not about what's going on tour. It's just about what it means to play golf and be a golfer. And the people that help shape that experience that we all get. So I don't think it matters that we're not really golfers. And of course, we have brilliant contributors that add so much to it. So the fact that we're not in the industry in some ways adds to it, because it's a
fresh perspective.
Yeah.
For sure. You mentioned there the article in the most recent issue, just a wee tweak about Roald Dornoch. I had a read of this last night, and it's a fascinating story about a club with a lot of history, but just the manner in which certain holes are designed certain ways and who they're designed by, I guess, or constructed by is fascinating. For anyone that will be listening now, like, how did that story come about in the first place? And what's the story about?
So when I did work in the golf industry, I was at the PGA show. This must be like 5-6 years ago. Easily the best day of my professional career. It was just brilliant. And Roald Dornoch were there as part of the Visit Scotland group. And Neil Hampton, who's the club manager, was there. And he's just one of the nicest guys you could ever hope to meet. So we had a great day out. And Oben Shafts, we're doing a big event. And I'd been speaking to the guys at Oban, and they said, we're going to do a whiskey thing after this. It's invite only, but you can come and bring someone. Because apparently the Oban Shaft name, I'm going off beam here, but it comes back. The Oban Shaft.
Don't worry, we like a rambling story. You're all right.
So they got their name because a group of Americans got together. They're like, we need to come up with the name of this company. They got really drunk on whiskey, and they woke up the next morning with a hangover, and it was Oban whiskey they were drinking. So they went, right, that's the name of our shaft company. So anyway, I'm telling Neil this. And I said, they've invited me plus one over for this little event. Do you want to come? And Neil's like, it's whiskey. I'll be there. So the two of us go, have a couple of drams, and, you know, basically became lifelong friends after that. And a few years further forward, the Lynx Diaries come into be, and I'm just basically phoning anyone I know in the industry to tell them about it so we can just get the name out there. And I phoned Neil and I said, look, if you've got any stories, of course people want to know more about Royal Dornoch. It's got like a cult-like following. It's easily one of the top 5-10 courses in the world, depending on people's views. So if you've got something, let us know. And he said, well, actually, I do. He said, the golf course that you see today isn't the way it's supposed to be. So instantly I'm hooked. I'm like, please tell me more. This is perfect. And he said that when I'm going to get details of this probably wrong slightly, but the Ministry of Defence took over the land during the war for trials and training. And when the land was given back, they were rebuilding the course. So they had staked it out, and the members had a look at it and thought that that's too hard. We're not doing that. And under the cover of darkness, the night before they started moving the earth, they came in and moved all the stakes. And the course that was built was the one that the members decided. So it's just a really cool story about members just saying, nah, that's not for us. We're going to do it ourselves.
And now, am I right in saying that the hole has now been redesigned? The seventh hole at Royal Dornoch has now been redesigned to where the original plans have been laid out. So yep. Was it a case of they're waiting for people to maybe pass on before they went back to the different hole, or why was that changed?
I think they just, when they realized what had happened, they, what, you know, it was designed for a reason. So they wanted it back to the way the designer saw it. So it's back as it should be now.
So have you played Dornoch recently?
I've never played it.
You've never played it.
And Neil's invited me a few times. And back to one of the first things you said, I've not actually played in Ireland. So, you know, we're equally bad here.
From reading the article, I know that what the plans for the seventh hole were was for the fairway to kind of come across the cliffs along the hole to give a big vista. So I'm sure now it's probably a stunning golf hole. You mentioned there that you've had some very good contributors, people that got in touch with you and have written articles for you. One of whom, I guess a lot of our listeners would also know, one of your articles, the introduction was done by Tron Carter of No Laying Up, but also Jim Hartzell, who Jim's kind of become a Scottish golf ambassador to everyone and anyone over in America. How did those guys start contributing for you, or how did that kind of relationships develop?
So Jim just got in touch. He, as far as I'm aware, because it was Jamie that got that relationship going, but as far as I know, Jim got in touch and said he loves Scottish golf. He loves, as people who know him know, he loves these off the beaten track courses, usually with cattle fences around the greens. Like, that's Jim's idea of heaven, along with an honesty box. So he got in touch and sent us his first article. He said, what do you think? And we're like, yeah, like, that is brilliant. And it was exactly the kind of stories we had envisioned. And in that first phase, because we couldn't get out, I mean, we were literally in lockdown at this point, we couldn't get out and get stories. So we could only go on what was available to us at the time.
So was he contributing from issue number one?
Yeah.
Wow.
Jim's been there right away. So we had started at the very beginning. It was like getting pictures out there and just sort of sharing the idea of what we hope this would become. And that was it. And, you know, Jim, honestly, with some contributors, we'll ask them for a certain thing. We'll say, you know, we're hoping for a story on this. Can you help us? And they do it. With Jim, we just say, what have you got? Because it's just knockout after knockout. He's so good. His stories are fantastic. And I have the pleasure now of playing golf with him once a year. as you say, he's an ambassador for Scottish golf. So he's over here every year now, and I've managed to play with him a few times, I think 3 years in a row now. And he's just one of the nicest guys you could ever hope to meet. And you'll be walking along the fairway and you'll realize he can be quite quiet on the golf course because he's just taking it all in. And you'll be out on the fairway and you'll go, wait a minute, is Jim here? And you look back and he's just standing, staring. And you can tell he's just in his absolute element, taking in everything around him. And it's just such a nice experience. And then to Tron, it was through Jim. So I don't know if you saw the film that No Laying Up did.
Yeah.
So Tron was over with Jim and they were, you know, filming all of that. And actually I was supposed to go and meet them when they played the Naverty. He was doing his book signing. And I couldn't make it that day. My wee boy was sick, so unfortunately I couldn't go. But I said to him, you know, can we play another day? And I got to play with Jim a couple of days later. But he then put us in touch with Tron, and he's been amazing. He's been on the phone to me a few times. We've had a few calls. He's been so helpful. Just someone to bounce ideas off. You know, like everyone knows how successful No Laying Up has been. So for someone like him to take the time and really just be a soundboard has been fantastic. So I reached out to him, asked if he could introduce an article, and he was delighted.
That's brilliant, because I guess like yourselves, this podcast set up during the pandemic as well, and yeah, in the same way, I guess the golfer's journey might be a shining light for you. Anyone that has a podcast in golf, the No Laying Up guys are kind of the North Star for what you want to eventually become. So to, yeah, have Tron be a sounding board for you is brilliant. Yourself then, what's your journey in golf? Like, how did you first find the game and get into it? So no one gets into something like this by being a passive golf fan.
No. I mean, my clubs are there. This is where I do my work calls, and everyone always comments on the clubs and knows that my mind is actually over there rather than on the work. I started playing about 7, and I'm from Glasgow, and if you're an athletic person in Glasgow, you play football and that's it. And I did, and I wasn't very good, so I needed something else. And my dad started to take me up to our local course. It's called Gledhirk. It's near Glasgow. And, you know, our summer nights up there, you're up high looking down on the river. It's just stunning. And it just became special time for my dad and me. And I just got more and more into it. The bug just took hold. It is an addiction, frankly. And actually, it got to the point where I thought I was quite good. I turned pro, mistakenly. I tried. I honestly was not good enough. I played at a small club where I was a big fish in a small pond and got ahead of myself.
Yeah.
It nearly ruined the game for me. I hated it for a while. And then it really was the Lynx Diary and getting involved with this that got me back to a place where I've never loved the game so much. You know, it's like being that 7-year-old kid again, because no one is in it for having to play well. I have the pleasure of playing with a few people that buy the magazine every now and then. I've got to know quite a lot of people, which is really nice. And no one cares about what you're shooting. And I've just taken that across my whole game now. And it's just made it the most fun I've ever had. If I'm playing well and I want to play well, then it's amazing. But if I'm not playing well, who cares? I'm on a golf course. And yeah, so it's been great. It took me to Luxembourg for a job, and it took me to Florida for a job. I lived on a golf course for a while. At my wedding in August, I'm one of my best men. I've got two, but one of them's going to be the guy I lived with in Florida. We worked together. And every night we'd go out and pitch on the green with Coronas and just take in the sunset. You know, that sounds kind of romantic. It wasn't, but yeah, no, it was just brilliant. And it remains just a massive part of my life.
Yeah, no, you can tell for sure, even from the writings in the articles. You've kind of become or are looking to become a wider media brand, and you've launched a YouTube channel which has kind of your films, your Lynx Diary films. There's a couple of lovely ones in there, and I know that you have like a, I'll call it a sister article in the seventh issue, where you call it A Night at the Jigger Inn. And there's a film, there's a lovely piece that you did with the called A Night of the Ducks. For anyone that hasn't seen that piece, could you explain it to me? And it's a funny thing, we started talking on this podcast about how one of your favorite articles in this issue began over a couple of drinks. I think Scottish watering holes are a very big part of Scottish golf, in the same way that you could probably say the same thing about Irish golf as well. The 19th hole is a pretty big part of golf.
Yeah. Or if you're Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth, you take the 19th hole onto the course with you. But you're gonna. So the Night of Ducks, Jamie and Graham especially have a good relationship with Malcolm through other work that they've done. And Malcolm's a really interesting guy. Honestly, I didn't know how interesting until that film came out. I knew he was an ex-serviceman. I knew he was a Marine because I'd met him a couple of times. And when I saw that film in its entirety for the first time, I was frankly blown away. It was just such a good story and so well put together. I had a bit to do with it, but not much. So I'm not, you know, this isn't me patting myself on the back here.
I'll take the credit. No necessary to take it.
But that, yeah, so, and we realized, like, kind of like when we did that online version of the magazine, we're like, this is actually going down quite well. And then we did The Last Caddy, who is Chris McBride from Prestwick. And that's had over 20,000 views. That went crazy. And I think it's just extending. We've done a story on Chris before in the magazine. Jim did it. And it's when you can almost bring the words on the page to life a little bit more and hear the voice of the person and get beyond the text a little bit in the pictures. I think it's captured people's imagination a bit more. And it's another way of us telling the stories. And then the Jigger one, the Night of the Jigger, that was one of the coolest experiences I've had with the Lynx Diary. So it was September, or late August or early September, and we were to go to the Jigger. We just decided we were going to do this. Go to the Jigger and see who we meet and talk to them about golf. Why are you in the Jigger? What's going on? So we went and we sat there and it was empty. And Graham and I were just like, what did we do? I said, just like scrambling for something, I said, I'm going to go and get a pint of Guinness. And can we just sort of get some pictures that at least start to build the story? Right, fine. And then this guy comes in, an American guy, and he says, is anyone sitting here? And we're like, no, please go ahead. And so he goes out to get his friends, and Graham and I just look at each other and go, we're in. So these, I think it was five American guys come in, and they were just brilliant. They chatted away and the conversation was flowing. And we got to the point where, inevitably the conversation came up. Who's the best golfer? Blah, blah, blah. And we asked that question and everyone turned to look at guy Steve, who was the first guy that came in. Everyone looked at him and I was like, oh, right, clearly it's this guy. Turned out that in 1994, I think it was, he had won the California State Championship. His name was Steve Woods and he won the California State Championship. And then someone in the table, I don't even know who, because I was just sort of sitting in awe right now. And someone went, there was another guy called Woods that he beat that week. And we're like, what? So this story just evolved, literally improvised from nowhere, because that guy walked in and it's kind of how we hoped it would go, but it was better than we could ever have imagined.
What do you look for in a story or an article for the Lynx Diary? Because like we were saying, this is not your swing tips type of publication. What do you, when you write to your contributors, or when you're writing a piece yourself, what is it that you think encapsulates a Lynx Diary story?
The first thing is that the four of us love it. We kind of are writing for ourselves, because that tends to be people like us that buy it. So that's the first hurdle. We'll send it around everyone. What do you think? And we get some that are great, but just not quite right. And we get some that just miss, unfortunately. But that's number one. And then it's sort of, is it a place that a lot of people know and love, or is it a place that people absolutely don't know and should love? That's another really good sort of indicator, like Royal Dornoch or Durness, for example. And it's Some of my favorite articles are like the ones from Reese. So the one you read, it was the Grass Barber. Or there was one called the Whistling Nostril that he did. And then we've got a guy, Gary Anderson from near us in Glasgow, actually. He writes some, and it's just, he did the concession one. And it's just cool things that we all know about in golf, or characters that we've met, and sometimes they're even fictional. But the way they write them, and I don't know, the words are just perfect, and you can picture someone that you've experienced like that, and it just brings a smile to your face. Like, there was a line in one of Reese's ones, I think it was the last one, and it's really stuck with me. And he said, he's talking about the first tee, and he said something like, four confident strikes of urethane on titanium, and we were away. And I was just like, that is just brilliant. So it's hard to put my finger on it. There's a couple of things we look for, but then it's just, does it make us smile, or does it kind of move us in some way? And that's it.
There's a lovely thing about magazines or publications like yourselves that it's almost envious, because also we started this podcast up, and we talk get to talk to very, very interesting people, and you get to visit some very interesting places as well. And I'm always a little frustrated when I leave them, because I find I never have the vocabulary, or I'm not coherent enough to explain what makes a certain place so special. So in the articles that I got to read, you're reading them and you're like, God, I wish I had the vocabulary to be able to explain a certain golf club that I played recently as well as this person is in this. And it's really, really nice. How often do the four of you get together? Do you all live in Glasgow, and are you all close? Or I guess from your reaction, there's a couple of you spread across the country at the very least.
Yes, yeah, so we're sort of nicely spread across the central belt. Jamie and I are near each other, sort of Glasgow side, and then you've got Graham down in Ayrshire. He's near Royal Troon, so he's perfect for the Open this year. And then we've got
You'll be all
Graham.
crashing on his couch with you this year. I
100%.
think we might be as well. We might give you a call.
That's fine. He's got loads of room. And then we've got Stuart over toward Edinburgh, so we're sort of spread nicely. Honestly, we probably get together. We are getting together more and more now as things are formalizing, and we realize that there is a lot of potential here. So, but there was the first time we were ever together was on Panmure. I think that was our third edition. I mean, of course, we with the pandemic, we couldn't anyway, even if we were close, we couldn't. So we got used to working apart, and we didn't have to change it. But now we probably get together 3 or 4 times a year. We had a couple of days together in the Mull of Kintyre. We played Shiskin, although I missed that one because of work. That was a painful miss, but I'll get back. Mac Jones, McIlhenny, and then Haverty. So we spent a couple of nights together, and that was just brilliant. It's always great to get together, and we didn't really talk business. It was just, let's play golf together.
Yeah, that's the nice thing about golf as well, is although it can become a job and it becomes a big part of your life, you can very easily, just because of how long it takes to play a round of golf, just drift out of the talking about work and then just start chatting shite about anything and everything, really. What's next in store for the Links? Are you, we'll start with the next issue first. Is there any kind of previews, or have you even decided what's going to be into issue 8?
So I've written an article about the Brunsfield short hole golf course, which I think is really cool. It was a brilliant night. It's in Edinburgh, and it's in a park in the middle of Edinburgh. And Stuart and I went one night when they had their big annual club championship on. So you're talking about holes that are about 70 yards long. It's a 36 hole course in the summer, and it's literally in the middle of a public park. And we arrived, and there was a couple breaking up by the 36th green. Definitely a breakup. You could just tell. I think they worked it out though by the way they left. There was an Asian couple practicing their pitching and putting on, must have been like the 7th green, completely oblivious to the fact that there was quite a big tournament going on. So they got shouted at, and then there's dogs everywhere. But it was just so cool because this is a tournament that's been going on like over 100 years, and it means so much to these people. We were talking to guys in their 70s, some that actually fly over. One guy flies over from Bulgaria every year so that he plays in this tournament. He has been playing that course since he was 7. One guy flies over from Dublin, again, same thing, he'd been playing it since he's 7. And actually, this was the land where the first golf club ever used to live. So Royal Burgess, which is now seen as recognised as the first golf club, that was where their course used to be. So it's a really cool historic piece of land. And we did a story on that. So I've got a bias, but that's one of my favourites because it was just the characters were cool. Jim Hartzell's written as a story about Iona Golf Club, which is, I mean, I can't even imagine how big Jim's smile must be when he plays that place. So, and it's called the Honourable Company of Iona Golfers. So like Muirfield is the Honourable Company of Edinburgh Golfers, which I think is just so cool. So he's done that one. I can't even remember all of the ones we've got. We've got one about Ladybank Golf Club, where one day Jack Nicklaus and Seve just showed up for a game. They had a bounce match, an exhibition match at this course in Fife. So we've got a story about that coming up and what it was like to be there that day. So there's a lot of cool stuff in the next one.
And is there plans to expand beyond kind of Scottish stories? Is it plans to go to kind of down toward England, Wales, and then maybe even Grace Our Shores?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've not done an Irish story yet. Off the top of my head, we've done one English story. And that was cool as well. So that one was about Cleeve Hill in Cheltenham. Actually, look, it's on a hill which is on the side of a quarry overlooking the Cheltenham racecourse. I've not played it. But it was a guy, Alex Frolish, who is online as Elevation Golf Nation. He's got quite a big following. And he just wrote us an article and said, you know, would you have any interest in putting this in your blog? We have the links notes that we occasionally publish on. And we read it and we were just like, that is phenomenal. That's going in the magazine. So that was our first English club. And we definitely want to branch out into other places. The problem, frankly, right now is because we are small, it's building that pool of photographers and writers that we know we can get the images and the words that justify the place. So as we grow, we can build that network. We were lucky with Cleve Hill that Stuart was living down south at the time, so he could go and take the pictures for that one.
Sure.
But yeah, definitely we want to branch out and cover the best links courses of the UK and Ireland.
So you talk about obviously how you're a small shop growing similar to our like ourselves. How do you fund this? I know you got a couple of partners on board.
We all chipped in at the start and we've kind of been self-funded. We have brilliant partners. So Jay Lindeberg were our first brand partner. So we don't do adverts in the magazine, but we do work with brand partners. They get a double page spread. They used to get an article, but it got harder and harder to write an article that was sort of talking about a brand, but not talking about a brand. And now we do a double page spread, but we work on it with them. So it's not an advert you would see anywhere else. It's bespoke for our magazine. And they've been a massive help. We hope to get some more. We would love to get one or two more. And I'm actively in discussion with some companies to try and get that. But it needs to be a company that we believe in. You know, Jay Lindeberg are my favorite golf clothing company. They kind of always have been since I discovered them. So I'm very happy that they're on board. And
that was a bit of a dream partnership for you. So
honestly, I was blown away when they were like, yeah, let's do it. And Jones Bags as well. They are brilliant. So yeah, they've been great. And we looked at, do we go for investment? And we've been getting some help, some mentorship from a friend of the team. And as we went down that route, he was asking us some questions. He's a successful entrepreneur. And he was like, I don't think any of you want to do this in terms of get external funding in, be beholden to someone else who's giving you money, potentially. Like, we could lose some editorial control there. And you're all saying that you would never want to sell it. Well, why would anyone want to invest in that? We're like, yeah, okay, so we're not doing that. We'll bootstrap it.
That's fair enough. I know we referenced the fact that kind of the Golfers Journal are like an inspiration or a guiding life, we'll say, rather than inspiration. Yep. Have you spoke to Tom Coyne or any of the guys from that team at all? We've had Tom on the podcast go a few times. He's again another good man for sharing his knowledge.
Yeah, I don't know any of them, to be honest. I met Christian Hafer once. So when Eric Anders Lang was over doing his tour of Scotland, Christian was part of that group. And I met him one night, incidentally, the first time I ever met Graham that night. So that's weird. But yeah, so Graham and Christian know each other. I think Jamie and Christian know each other. But I personally haven't spoken to anyone. That's just, you know, I think there's been some messages here and there, but not much.
Yeah. Well, I imagine, look, it's all similar circles that everyone starts running in. It'll be a matter of time before your paths cross. I know that the Golfers Journal are coming to Ireland this summer for about a week or so. So I'm sure a few of them will probably make the journey toward your way.
Yeah, they're doing your field as well. So
there you go. Do you know, it's funny that we're having this conversation because my co-host Michael sent me a voice note about 3 days ago, and he was telling me about an idea that he had for a video, which is an idea that I think every group of golf buddies has. And he was like, we just need to get in a car, get in the ferry over to Scotland, and just try get on the ballot, just turn up at St Andrews and just try and play it. Let's say we go over, we do that. Let's say we don't get on the ballot. What are three courses that if we have 3 days there in Scotland, where are three places that you think we absolutely must go and play? It doesn't necessarily have to be like the greatest golf course, but from a you know, club vibe perspective, or the people that make a club, or even just the course itself, where are a couple of spots that you think we must go and visit?
So I'm going to have some bias here, but I'll be honest with it. I'm a member at Panmure Golf Club, which sits beside Carnoustie. So I don't think you can fault there. The course is amazing. It's got cool history with Ben Hogan in 1953. He stayed there for 2 weeks to learn the links game before he won the Open next door at Carnoustie. And the clubhouse is stunning. The people are brilliant. The club manager, David, is one of the nicest and most helpful guys you'll ever meet. So definitely Panmure. And get in touch with me if you're doing it, because I'd like to be there. I think the new course at St Andrews is a phenomenal golf course. Some people say that they prefer it to the old course. So I would definitely just hop next door and give that a shot. I love Carnoustie. It's probably my favourite golf course in the world. It was the first Open Championship course I played, so it's got a special place in my heart. And around there, you know, you've also got like King's Barnes, you've got Dumbarney if you want a newer experience. And another one that to squeeze in, if you've even played 18 that day, but, you know, given how long our evenings are, I would go and play Anstruther, because it's a nine-holer. It has, I think, on the fourth or fifth hole, a hole that was once voted the hardest par three in the world. I played it twice and bogeyed it twice, and I'm delighted with that record. Mental. And then they have one of the best chip shops in the world nearby too. So, you know, off the top of my head, you couldn't go far wrong with them.
They're pretty good recommendations. I think you may hear from us sooner rather than later, to be honest with you on that. What's next then for Link Story? What's the plans? What's the great ambitions? Obviously not something that you're looking at selling. So what's the goal?
So like I say, we've got one guy full time now. Pressure's on because he can't live forever as the only guy full time. So I think this year's really important for us to really push on so that we can get someone else full time. And we're going to do it one at a time, hopefully, and all get there in time. We're going to do more films. They've gone down really well. They're a lot of fun for us to do as a team. And Graham does most of them. He sort of relishes that chance to put stuff down in film. So more of them. Like I say, this year is going to be the first time we do three editions rather than two. So that's going to be a challenge in itself. And so far, things are going really well. So we're trying to get ahead. So we've got two or three editions in the bank, and it'll make life easier. And right now, that's the immediate ambitions. Who knows what we'll become? We just want to become sort of more of a household name. And I think, honestly, right now, the way the world of golf is, with the way professional golf's going, well, men's professional golf in particular, there's a sort of, it feels like an over-commercialization. And I think people are forgetting what it means to play golf rather than just watch it. Or it's easy to detach yourself from what those two things are. And we just hope to become that one place where the joy of playing golf remains and people can tap back into it. So, you know, if you're on a long flight or you can't get out on the golf course for whatever reason, that's our magazine or our films are a place you can go to just slightly get a taste of that.
You spoke about the kind of commercialization or the over commercialization of golf and trying to get back to what golf means to you personally, and I guess to the Links Diary team. What does golf mean to you?
It's my escape. I'm busy. We're all busy because we all have jobs plus the Links Diary, and getting time on a golf course with good people is one of the greatest joys of my life. 4 hours or so with good people, maybe a couple of beers on the way around, good chat. You really can't beat it.
How can people get in touch with the Links Diary, or how can they order the next issue?
On our website, so thelinksdiary.com. That's where we sell it. We're going to be doing subscriptions soon too, so it's a membership. There's going to be more than just the magazine, but so yeah, we're calling it a membership. You can get on there and get yourself sorted for the year in our shop. And then, of course, social media, Instagram, we're at The Links Diary. And I think that's a good place to start to see the images, to see the films, and get to know the product a little bit better.
Yeah, like I said, you sent the latest issue on to me. I had a really good read of it, really enjoyed it. I wouldn't be the greatest reader, so if anyone was looking at getting into reading something different or learning a little bit more about golf, these are definitely stories that you don't pick up anywhere else, and I highly recommend. Really, really enjoyed reading them. Kenny, thanks very much for coming on. I really appreciate your time.
No, thank you so much. It's been brilliant. Cheers.
On the tee, Jack Nicklaus.
This is the minute the millions around the world have waited for.
We will allow you to enjoy all of this. They are dancing in the pubs of Dublin. Harrington with an ace.
And we have a shining star at sunset. Rory continues his run to greatness.
The return to glory.